accession number 18822, Reel 2.
George Aitchison, Reel 2.
Yes, I was told that you could, for every 200 miles, you could stop, of your journey towards your regimental centre, you could stop one night somewhere. And since it was 400 miles from Bombay to the 4th Gurkha Regimental Centre in Buccleuch, about level with, on a branch line, level with Amritsar, I was allowed one night, again, paying only 5 rupees for the hotel. I better explain that the reason why I reached the 4th Gurkhas was that was due to the hazards of the alphabet. We were a group of 50 second lieutenants with only 5 minutes service between us, and we were on a nominal roll by order of alphabetical order of octaves, like Barford, Bulmer, Wolford, Dunbar. And on that list, Dunbar being further down the alphabet than B, Barmouth, etc., I was number 42. And aboard ship's assistant adjutant came round and said, "I've put two chaps down for every one of the 19 Indian infantry regiments, and the rest have gone to the 10 Gurkha regiments, and the last two, I'm afraid, had to go to the service corps." So it was a sheer lottery as to what happened to you. But I was eternally grateful. It was much better being with a Gurkha battalion, if you could only learn Nepali sufficient to tell your subedar and jemadars what was actually going on. They didn't even wait for the formality of an O group. They would use their common sense and experience, salute smartly, double sharply away, and do anything that was necessary. And that saved me professionally and physically throughout the war. If it had been in an Indian battalion, or worse still, a British battalion, I'd have never survived. Anyway, that's, of course, going rather too far ahead. And I reached the regimental centre and didn't find favour. I was wearing those army-issue other-rank spectacles that are unbreakable, very practical, and can be used under a respirator. But it made you look hideous, and I lacked the ability to look smart and soldier-like in uniform. There was always something slightly shaggy about the... I either hadn't had a haircut recently, or something was unpressed, or and appearance was all in the... I call it pre-war, because I don't think you can say the war hit India until 42. And as posted to the 1st Battalion, and found that they'd gone to Madras and crossed over to Rangoon. They'd been on the Northwest Frontier and had been training for Western Desert, and trying to find desert conditions as far as they could. But with the emergency following Pearl Harbor, they were just subbed in. 6 whole battalions, poor blighters, had gone to Singapore, and there was just one brigade and a divisional headquarters lying around, and was just sent to Rangoon, and any battalion that happened to be available was formed up into a brigade of 3 battalions, and then another brigade, and that made them it viable. And from Burma, of course, if we walked far enough, marched far enough and fast enough, we could eventually get to the relative safety of Imphal. Whereas in Malaya and Singapore, no option. You were in the bag and that was it. Sorry, can I stop a moment? Because I'm trying to collect my... I didn't find favour. And I was posted centre brigade as brigade orderly officer, which was a non-job. All you did was look after each headquarters, brigade headquarters, div headquarters, corps headquarters, had a platoon to protect that headquarters. And you had to sight the platoon each night and dig the trenches, but make sure that the men did the right thing and didn't get trench feet or lose their ammunition or any other bêtise.
Where was this, by the way?
The battalion reached Rangoon quite late, I think the last day of January, and were brigaded with two other Gurkha battalions. First battalion, the fourth. We were brigaded with the first, third, and second, fifth. I better explain that in peacetime, there were 10 Gurkha regiments, each with two battalions, which were referred to as first, second, third, and so on. And in 1940-41, that number was doubled. So we had first, second, third, fourth for each of the 10 regiments, and we usually wrote 1/4 or something to indicate what we meant. And we were very lucky to have 3 Gurkha battalions brigaded, because at a pinch we would talk Gurkhali to each other. I mean, the men could talk Gurkhali, and gave nothing away to lose security. As you spoke Urdu or English, something might... One of the Burmese might pass the information on. Let's see.
So you were in Rangoon in January 42?
Yeah. And end of February. And sometime in February, the battalion was sent to Billin River. Everything was going wrong. I've got 6 pages written out.
Oh, don't worry about that, because that's on record already. Just go from memory, please.
All right, okay. Everybody knew, of course, that the Japs were no good. They'd made terribly heavy weather fighting a bunch of coolies under some political adventurer called Chiang Kai-shek, and another bunch of coolies under some political madman called Mao Zedong. And the Japs really hadn't been terribly clever with them, and they were short, stunted fellows with bad eyesight, spectacles, and very poor shots. And at the Octu, I had, like everybody else, had to give a 10-minute lecturette. And my lecturette was, man for man, the Japanese soldier is as good as his British opposite number. And, of course, everybody laughed like hell. And the chief instructor said, well, we all know that they're a funny bunch, you know, poor shots, bad eyesight, and making heavy weather of fighting coolies. So they're not to be taken seriously. But he said, it's good to have somebody say something ridiculous, and, you know, a good laugh helps the morning out, morning's instruction out.
How had you come to this unorthodox conclusion?
My father's letters from Shanghai. Every British chap in Shanghai joined something like the Shanghai Volunteer Corps, or my father actually joined the Shanghai Fire Brigade. And when the Japs attacked the Chinese in August 37, my father was lucky enough to be posted to Hongqiu, which was really a nasty area. It was right next to Shape, which is just over the international boundary, where the Japs were behaving absolutely abominably, a kind of preview of the Nanking rape, burning, destruction, vandalism, anything that couldn't be useful to the Japs was just smashed, shot up, vandalized. There were casual killings on a large scale at the whim of an NCO or an officer, and of course rape everywhere. It was to happen again in Nanking later that year on a much larger scale. I think we recently had a book by J.G. Ballard about it. I'm not sure. And my father wrote and said that the 19th Route Army, Chinese 19th Route Army under Chiang Kai-shek, was surprisingly good. They dug in well in Shape, which was that suburb which contained the railway station terminal, but was outside the international settlement, and used sharp bamboo sticks in defensive position, and then more bamboo to screen where they were from the Japs. And they were difficult to... they had enough arms and ammunition against all expectations, and they were difficult to winkle out by the Japs. And the Japs actually made slightly heavy weather of it. But that, generally speaking, we should remember Colonel Hamilton. Hamilton was a chap who was a failure commanding in Gallipoli later, but in the Russo-Jap War of 1904, he was an observer. And he said something like, "I say again for the umpteenth time that the Jap infantry is simply the best in the world. They are not merely as brave as lions, but prepared to die as a matter of course, and all they ask is the respect of their comrades in arms and their emperor." And letters like that, it took 6 weeks to arrive, or more, sometimes longer. I was desperate for a subject, but it enabled me to produce the 10-minute lecturette. Looking ahead, when we finally reached Imphal about 5 months later, I wrote to the chief instructor saying, in effect, see what I meant. And of course, he never replied. So there we were. The Japs were unbelievably successful. Within, let's see, by about May 1942, December, it was 6 months since Pearl Harbor, and of course, from our point of view, 6 months since the Repulse and the Prince of Wales had gone to the bottom. In that 6 months, with complete naval and air superiority, the Japs had conquered 20 million square miles of the Earth's surface in Southeast Asia and the Pacific, from the Siberian border to the Solomons, and from the Arakan to Wake Island. They waited in Burma until they were certain the Malay effort was going to be a success. And then, I think, if you want, the Burma campaign started about the 19th of January, when a few battalions meant mainly for internal security, but of course they had to adjust briskly to the needs of a war. A battalion of the Coilies, the 3rd 7th Gurkhas, and a total of 8 Burmese battalions, and the 5th 17th Dogras and the 7th, 10th Baluch. And the chaps just pushed those really quite good British and Indian battalions, just sort of beat them to hell. The Dogras were broken in a single night. The Burmese battalions, of course, faded. Some survived one night and then deserted, threw away their weapons, threw away their uniforms, put on lunches, and just disappeared. Others did the same, but only after their own village had been overrun by the Japs, if that makes sense. And only, I think, 1.5 battalions were still with us at Imphal. Burma is slightly larger than France, although because of the Mercator protection, things on the equator always look small, whereas the distances are in fact enormous. And things went terribly badly. Wavell was put in charge of ABCA, American, British, Chinese and Dutch forces throughout the entire area from a totally inadequate headquarters in Surabaya. And from Surabaya to Imphal was 2,000 miles. And to fly even to Rangoon to talk to a divisional commander, it was a major effort.
Can we pick up your personal story Rangoon, please?
Well, we were never in Rangoon. We were at Mingladun Barracks. And then the battalions had been just brushed aside. The Japs captured Moulmein, which is disastrous because it had a decent port. They had, therefore, and they had complete command of the sea, so they were being supplied. And they had been fighting for the ones we came up against, notably the 33rd White Tiger Division, had been fighting for about 4 years in China, and their battle drills were polished to the nth degree. They really were good. And they had the sense to choose some caliber. It was either 81mm or 88mm, and everything, an anti-tank rifle, a mortar, or anti-aircraft caliber, all of that caliber, so that there we were wandering around with a chap saying, I say, old chap, you haven't got any spare 4-5 Tommy gun ammunition? And no, all we've got is far too many rounds of 0.5 anti-tank. We haven't enough guns to use them properly. That was the kind of shambles on our side, whereas the Japs were bristly competent and had thought carefully and over the years had developed sound ideas like standardising their weapon calibers and so on. I don't know if is this making sense.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. And I didn't see any action because I was in brigade headquarters, but our battalion put quite a good show at a place called Billin River. They stopped the Japs in their tracks for 4 days, but we weren't allowed to capitalize on that because the Jap was terribly clever. Like a scorpion, he would do a frontal attack and then, like a scorpion, send 50 or 100 men with medium machine guns and possibly an 81mm mortar round one side and round the other side, and then start attacking us from the rear, and in addition leaving men hidden in villages up the rafters of huts and in trees, or sitting in barrels intended to store rice, you know, hidden everywhere in penny packets, and they were very difficult to winkle out. And at the same time, they would send groups even further back, because it was easy enough in a country the size of Burma to outflank wherever you wanted, and that would leave our divisional commander nervously pulling units back. And on one dreadful occasion, a message was sent en clair ordering the 4th, 12th, 24th Rifles to come back to Sitang Bridge. And that was briskly picked up by General Aida's intelligence officer, translated, and Aida took a chance and sent two brigades, good and fast, up towards the Sitang Bridge. I think he used the railway, except for the inconvenience of stepping onto railway sleepers. It was by far the quickest way to get a marching army from A to B. Of course, they had the advantage. They were on, they had already decided that conditions in Burma were such that every Jap had a pack with everything in that he could need, including 3 days' rations, and anything else would be taken not by motor transport but by ponies, not mules either, ponies. I never understood, but they went for ponies. Well, I don't know where they got them from. Peacetime, we used to get polar ponies sent down from Siberia. For all I know, they, after fighting in Manchukuo, the Japs had acquired a large supply of ponies, and they were sent. Firstly, they could climb quite difficult jungle tracks in the hills between Thailand and Burma, and whereas a vehicle couldn't. And so on. So they were relatively mobile, and we were, because our posting had been the Western Desert, we were entirely dependent on vehicles, which, again, everything went wrong. On a key bridge somewhere near Moulmein, a vehicle driven by a Madrasi with about 3 weeks' service slipped and fell with its chassis across the edge of a bridge, and that blocked everything both ways. We hadn't got the machinery to lift a 3-ton lorry, and so if it could go wrong, it did go wrong. So we had to move back to Sitang Bridge, because two whole brigades of Japs were behind us, and again everything went wrong. The bridge was blown at the wrong time. A lot has been written about this, and about 9/10 of our forces are on the wrong side of the bridge, and 300 carefully hoarded boats plus some viable motorized craft, which would have got a lot of men in safety across the river Sitang. Every one of those boats had been destroyed by some overzealous officer on the grounds that they might fall into enemy hands. And when we marched, that dreadful march from Bilin to Sitang, going through jungle during the night, and instead of sensibly taking the railway line or something, or any cleared line, we got to our supply dump, which we'd left at some point, and it had all been burnt by another officer who said that it might fall into enemy hands. So we had everything, boots, food, razor blades, anything you like to think of, was just, it had just gone up in flames.
And you were on that march from the Bilin to the Sitang?
Sitang. Well, in a way, I was in relatively less to go because brigade headquarters was behind, and I only had one platoon to deal with. Gurkha battalions had very few British officers. There was only 12. There was the colonel, a 2IC, four rifle company commanders, a headquarter company commander, an adjutant, a quartermaster, and an intelligence comm signal officer, and a couple of spares, 12 in all. They had rather a lot to do if things went wrong. Brigade was relatively secure and well placed, and we were pushed onto the correct side of the river. And apart from getting 30 men to dig slit trenches and stand around looking as though they could defend them, I had really nice to do. And this persisted as we withdrew through Burma. I saw practically, I didn't command troops in action at all. I mean, I dug defensive positions, at least the men dug them for me, dozens of times, but we were never called upon. Brigade headquarters defensive team was never called upon to dash out and do something. Occasionally we lost a chap transferred back to the battalion because of battalion casualties. So it's more important to have somebody there than hanging around brigade. One way or another, one of the things I did do was every now and again some staff officer probably wearing red tabs would come and say, we must not yield another yard of Burmese soil. At various points, Wavell in Surabaya, 1,000 miles away, would send some signal like, you must not yield another yard of Burmese soil. I refuse you permission to cross the so-and-so river to use it as an anti-tank trap. You must fight and stand where you are. Whereupon, with a cynical laugh, the colonel of the 2IC would say to our the brigade major would say to the staff captain, take Edgerton with you, go back 20 miles and try and find somewhere that looks like a reasonable defensive position with access to water, and if possible, we still had some transport with us at a road, and then make some dispositions, and we'll probably be there with you within 2 days. And indeed, they were. The instructions not to use certain rivers as an anti-tank obstacle, retire behind them and use an anti-tank obstacle, not yield another yard of Burmese soil was ridiculous. The situation was shambolic. After all the